The committee will come to order. Members, we do have a quorum, and I'm wondering, Representative Brown, if you can move our last 2 minutes, March 3rd and March 4th.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Brown moves the minutes of March 3rd and March 4th. Discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Welcome to the new committee look. We thought we'd lower the stress levels and kind of get some moody lighting in here. Representative Murdoch is going to bring the candles to the next meeting. And we're saving energy on top of it. So I'm told that this has something to do with construction work that's going on. Otherwise, we would turn on the lights, but apparently we can't do that. So our bill presenters will be literally presenting in the dark. So, members, we have two bills up today. They're substantive bills. We have a mandate, education mandate reduction or removal bill, and then we have a homeschool mandate reduction bill. We're going to take Representative Tilbury's bill up first, and that's House Bill 920. Morning, Representative Tilbury.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tilbury, the chair will move that House File 920 be recommended to pass. We may be changing these motions later on, depending on how the discussion goes. But let's just say, unless you have a direct place you want it to go to, I was just going to move it to finance with a re-recommendation to K-12 finance.
And I think that is where I was headed also, but there might be a section that I might have to ask your guidance on to see where it goes after that.
Very well. So the chair moves House File 920 be recommended to pass and referred to the finance committee with a re-referral to with a recommendation that it be re-referred to K-12 finance. Is this an option amendment? And then, Representative Tilbury, you do have an author's amendment. Is this a delete off? It's not. All right. So, members, it's the A3 amendment. And Representative Tilbury, I take it this puts, well, I'm not sure. This just puts, I guess it puts the bill in the form that you wanted before us. Do you feel like we should? I haven't read the amendment, so I apologize. Are there substantive things that we need to?
Yes, it's kind of an interesting scenario because really, remember, the bill that we have currently, which is 920, is really a skeletal bill.
Yes.
It's one, and I think I have to kind of explain the process of how we got to that point even before we talk about the amendment, because really the amendments are the ones that make the bill.
Very well. Why don't you go ahead and do that, and then we'll act on the amendment.
Well, the first thing I wanted to do is the K-12 Education Finance Committee had put together a mandate reduction work group. And this particular work group, the members were Representative Benson, who, you know, opted out of being the chair, as we all know. And
some members go to great extremes.
Yeah, exactly.
I have asked to speak, Mr. Chair, in my defense.
we'll give you the mandatory 30-minute Benson rule. Representative Tilbury.
So then the assignment then went to me with chairing this group, which was Representative Benson, Representative Brown, Representative Detmer, Representative Depke, Representative Morgan, and Representative Ward. And I really do feel that this was a bipartisan effort to put in front of everyone. I think I was very pleased with working with all of these individuals and how much help they were with this project. To start it out, the work group was given from various organizations, whether it be the School Board Association or AMSD or others. We were given over 100 different mandate possibilities that they were requesting for us to look at to discontinue or amend or whatever the case might be. And so the work group focused and had to focus on a way to get this narrowed down to something that was reasonable to put in a bill. And what they decided to do was to start out with the mandate reduction with a few questions that they had to answer. A few questions they answered: would it be savings to the district is the number one answer. We really wanted school districts to be able to save money during this time. The second question is, if it referred to contracts or contractual information and things like that, we chose not to pursue that. We felt with a group of 3.5 weeks old, we didn't think that would do a satisfactory job. And then in the third reason or thing that we looked at to help evaluate this was in the case of special ed. Those of us who are on the K-12 Finance Committee know that there's a task force that was assigned this duty, and they were to look and see what the differences were between Minnesota's laws versus the federal guidelines. And we felt we would be duplicating their work, and like I said, 3.5 weeks of work would not come close to what they spent time in. So that was the third thing we looked at. And then also we looked at other things where there were individual representatives that were carrying bills on their own that might answer to a possible mandate reduction, and we felt that we didn't need to pursue that any longer as long as the bill was on its way. And give you an example, one mandate was start a school prior to Labor Day, and we all know that Representative Norton was carrying something similar to that. And so we let that be. The work group met about 6 different times on their own to determine what types of mandates they wanted to look at. They came up with a list of 24, and we sent them the 24 mandate possibilities to reduce or repeal, and we sent that out to various superintendents. And it wasn't scientific by which superintendent got it. It was basically the luck of the draw on the committee. They all referred to their superintendents to ask them the question. And the superintendents then sent back a form that said, these are the, if this particular mandate was done away with or repealed, what would be the positive effect, and then what would be the negative effect? And as they answered these questions, you can imagine we got several different types of answers. We've got from rural Minnesota to metro, and they all varied in their responses. So as chair of this particular work group, what I decided to do was put together this particular bill, which is House File 920, which came about with 4 mandate reductions that we would say were innocuous. In other words, there was no controversy surrounding them. They were very obvious to get rid of. I think one of them was on the books since 1959. Just different things in that nature. But that, once again, was the skeletal nature of this particular bill. Then we were fully intending to have an author's amendment to add in other mandate reduction pieces. However, we felt, as we were sitting down with the work group, we felt we needed public testimony to happen because we had lots of questions of the various groups, and we wanted to make sure that they had ample opportunity to give us an idea what we were doing with this. So we had 2 different hearings that were open to the public, and we went down the list of approximately 24 of these particular mandates, and then we came up with the author's amendment that should list out some of the changes that we did. And so that's the brief history of how this came about, and that's why we're on to the author's amendment A3.
Very well, thank you, Representative Tilbury. We have a couple questions. Representative Benson, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment here and thank Representative Tilbury for doing such an excellent job in running this. Before I took a health detour, I was to be the chief author of this bill. And Representative Tilbury was kind enough to take this work from me and has done such a wonderful job. I just want everyone on the committee to realize that he stepped in and took over, and how much I appreciate it. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Benson. It's good to have you back, even if you aren't the chief author of this bill. I suspect we'll see you chief authoring some bills here shortly. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I see 3 parts to this amendment, and I think some are non-controversial and some are controversial. Maybe just to make your little better since it's one of those omnibus amendments you were talking about. I think if we discuss them in sections, it would be more productive, and so I'd move to divide the amendment.
Well, Representative Abler, why don't we hold off for a second? We actually don't have the amendment yet.
Okay. When it does, I think we should discuss it in sections.
And two, I think what you're referring to is policy versus finance provisions. Or you just want to consider them. All right, why don't you hold off for a second, and I'll be back to you. Representative Zepke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Tilbury. I feel that pretty much what you said is very true, and I enjoyed working on the committee. I thought that we did a lot of good work, and it was quite a pleasure to work with my friends on the other side of the aisle on things that were important to us. I only have one thing that I don't recall. I know I did get a copy of the amendment this morning before committee, and I do see that 11 of the 16 amendments that we were going to be considering this morning are there. However, the creation of the Legislative Commission for Mandate Reform, in my recollection, was not discussed, so I do want to make that clarification to the rest of the Policy Committee this morning.
Members, why don't we, since we're actually talking about the amendment, which really is the bill, and again, basically because of the nature of the work, and I think it was important for Representative Tilbury to explain how they proceeded, essentially Representative Tilbury had a bill introduced that basically just served as a placeholder. There were, of course, I think four or five provisions in there, but it was never the intention of the author that bill simply, be in that form, and that going through a process, we would then get to the bill in the form that that he and the task force would have it before us. And so I think it's appropriate at this point to move the A3 amendment. And Representative Abler, to your question, I think, frankly, it would be better if we just adopt the A3 amendment, put the bill in the form that the author wishes it to be, and then we can begin to dissect it if we need to in terms of voting on amendments. And that's, sort of a custom and usage here that we allow our authors to present the bills before us in the way that that they want them to be. Typically, that's a delete-all amendment, but again, there was a uniqueness here because we're basically introducing a shell bill that would then allow the process to go forward. So if I can ask that with your indulgence, that if we can do it that way, then we can eventually get around to making amendments off of the amendment.
Just a comment that I'm willing to indulge the chair. It's not my intention to kill anything in particular, but just that these are one is extremely controversial, this commission thing, and is popped out of nowhere, I think. And I don't know that it moves us in a good direction, but just in terms of the author putting the bill in the form they desire, I think at the first committee that's appropriate. But as the customers become, they get to put it in the form they want at whatever committee. And so with that indulgence and at your request, I will withdraw my motion. But I just to remind members that once the committee has acted on a bill, the second committee it goes to, it's no longer, a person could have introduced any bill they wanted. And that's why the author can do it the first committee however they would have wanted. They could have introduced this bill in this form. They would have got it all figured out by then. And so on that basis, I'll indulge the author out of respect. But just remind you in the future that it's different in the second committee.
It's good advice, Representative Abler. Of course, this is the first committee. Right. This bill is before us. So, members, we have the A3 amendment, or actually the chair moves the adoption of the A3 amendment. All in favor of that, motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. So, Representative Tilbury, now we've got the bill as amended. And if you can walk us through it, that would be helpful. You may need some help from staff, I understand, just sort of throw a nod. Members, it would be my, as I'm counting here, there were, I think I have this right, that there were four really policy provisions in the shell bill, if you will, in the initial bill, and that this amendment adds another four policy provisions. There are also seven provisions added by the A3 amendment that are much more finance issues, and really, I think, are better vetted more carefully in Representative Greiling's committee, assuming the bill gets to Representative Greiling. And so I'm hoping that we can spend, we'll certainly identify all the provisions. I think that's absolutely appropriate. But I would hope that we would spend, I would try to direct our conversation to really strongly vet the more purely policy provisions. And so we'll identify those as we go forward. But of course, members, you are absolutely within your right to ask questions on any sections of the bill. And then finally, there are three, or maybe it's one provision related to this commission idea that Representative Epke and Representative Abler identified as well. So Representative Tilbury, why don't you get us going, and
okay.
We'll try to move as quickly as possible. If you have questions at any point, just let me know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I want to address Representative Depke's concern right away, right out of the box. We had a gathering of our work group to discuss the two hearings that we took place of all the public testimony and so on, and we went through all 24 to determine what ones that we were going to follow. And one of the pieces that we always went to was we wanted some kind of method just to have it sunset. All of these particular mandates either to sunset or in 2 years realize what we've done, because we have to remember we spent about a month on this whole project and we figured that we needed someone to look at this. And that's where this particular Commission on Mandate Reform, and if I can interest you in some where Representative Maury Lanning is also doing some mandate work through our property tax division, and he has a commission that is looking at city government and county government. And rather than have more layers or more commissions or whatever, I had asked Representative Lanning if it'd be possible to join the school with this particular commission. And the commission is comprised of legislators. It's not appointed by the governor or other things like that. So that was the reason to go in that particular direction. So the object behind that was not to to push off all kinds of things onto this particular commission, but it is something where I looked at a month worth of work to throw out mandates that have been on the books for a long time, needed to have legislative approval down the road to see what has happened. What decision did we make? What unintended consequences took place? So that is the reason behind the particular commission. I was just joining forces with Representative Lanning. The one thing I had difficulty with is looking at getting rid of or repealing mandates and then have in my bill a mandate. And all that doesn't make a lot of sense. But we do have to have some kind of legislative check of whether or not our decision made any good or we did anything with this. And so that was the purpose behind this particular commission. So to answer Representative Depke's question, that is, in my estimation, a way to have a sunset clause. I suppose we could easily just say no commission and just say let's have a sunset clause, but then where does it go at that point? Who looks at it? What committee takes it up? And I felt that maybe if someone specialized in mandate reduction, we would get smart at this and do it well.
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tilbury, if I'm looking at this right, this commission would be in existence, until June of 2013? Is that the intent?
Representative Tilbury.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tilbury, I'd feel a lot more comfortable if we could, if we're going to have the commission, that I would think that they could do a fair amount of work in a year. It wouldn't take that long, I wouldn't think, to complete their work. I served on the commission to end poverty, and we certainly weren't giving that much time to finish our work. So
we certainly could have used more on that commission, Representative Dornan.
We're not done yet, are we?
Yeah.
On that commission?
Actually, we're technically formally done, but the work obviously continues.
Yeah. Just an example.
Members, I'm sensing that there may be amendments that will be offered. I think Representative Abler had suggested as much at the very beginning. I just want to make sure, want you to know that I'll make sure we have time to do that. I've asked my staff, we had actually, for the chair's sake, put together kind of a nice little flow sheet of the A3 amendments. So I've asked the pages to copy that and share with all members as well. I think it'll help walk through the bill and identify those pieces so you're not just having to figure it out based on the A3 amendments. So that's being passed out now. Representative Tilbury.
I think the other item is I wanted to be in respect of Representative Lanning, and I copied his language that's going into it. So I think that if I was open to any amendments to it, I would feel like it would be nice to be able to see if those two mesh. But obviously both are open to changes all along the way. But I just wanted to match up with his idea on it. If we could move to another significant one that I think is in the A3 amendment that the work group really wanted to focus in on, and I'm going to name maybe some of the ones that seem to be, could be controversial, and once again, these particular mandates, I think a lot of them are controversial, as we found out in our public meeting.
Representative Tilbury, I appreciate your approach here. I think you're trying to identify pieces that, you know, would probably generate more controversy, but it actually might be helpful to walk through it in order,
okay.
And then I think it's just a little confusing for us to jump around in the bill, but I do appreciate what you're trying to do, but I think it's easier for the committee to follow it if we just take this in order, statutory order.
Sequential.
And Representative Tilbury, we can certainly ask our staff to help in that process.
And I have most of it in statutory order.
Okay.
But the ones that if there was only two of them I wanted to mention that were out of order.
I see. All right. Well, then I apologize. Once you, so you already mentioned the commission piece, and
right.
You were about to identify the second piece.
Actually, sorry, there's three. There's two in addition to the additional ones.
Go for it, Representative.
All right. If we look under something called 123B.79, it is temporary authority for school districts to make fund transfers.
What page are you on, Representative?
And that's on pages 18 and 19.
Thank you.
To give you a little history behind this one, we thought that what would be great with a mandate, especially in times like these that we have, was to giving the school district the ability to make fund transfers between accounts and so on. We thought that was a simple call, but then when we had our public hearing, we found out that they wanted that flexibility, but yet they said, but don't touch this fund and don't touch that fund and don't touch that fund. And so what we decided to do was we matched language with what we did last session and gave the particular districts the chance to do it. We had, remember, if you recall, we transferred up to $51 per pupil from its reserved operating capital account to its undesignated general fund balance. And that's the way we had gotten to that language is things that we had already done in the last session. And it limits it to some extent, but it also gives flexibility.
And members, I'm identifying this as primarily a finance issue to be discussed. I would hope we not spend a whole lot of time on that particular provision here.
The second one that's out of order that I want to bring up was, one of my personal favorites, which is the maintenance of effort requirements regarding school support staff, such as counselors, social workers, psychologists, nurses, and so on. And the work group had decided as a somewhat compromise with this, rather than repealing the whole thing and taking that particular mandate out, what was happening or what was described to us is the object is when you, let's say a counselor retires and they're making $75,000 a year or so, and they're, you know, high on the list, what the language was saying is that the school districts have to hire then as many people up to that $75,000. So rather than have the dollar being the amount, we wanted to make sure that the district could hire somebody at a lower price and not necessarily have that be a dollar maintenance of effort, but we still felt it important to have that position filled. So that was the other one that we came up with some language on that.
Thank you. And Representative Tilbury, again, that provision I identify as primarily a finance issue. The policy on that had been already set in the last biennium. And again, I would expect discussion, more careful discussion in Representative Granley's committee. And so, anyway, Representative Faust has a question on that, but I'd like to keep that brief, Representative Faust.
It will be very, very brief. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What happens if a school district has declining enrollment if they drop their enrollment by 10%? Do they still have to maintain the 75,000 or that one position? Or how is it currently, and how will that change? Or doesn't that impact at all?
I'm going to have to consult with Ms. Larson on that to see if you could repeat that, Representative Faust.
Members, we don't have our finance staff here. So again, questions of perhaps are better asked, but we can certainly ask our staff to get your information because some of you don't serve on the finance committee. I don't think we're prepared to solve those. Representative Gravin.
Mr. Chair, just briefly, we can do that. We'll discuss it, I'm sure, in finance. But it looks to me like it wouldn't matter. But I would just say that since we are 50th in the nation in terms of numbers of counselors, that shouldn't matter. That district that has declined enrollment still would need the counselors with this provision.
Very well. Representative Tilbury, so we've identified the three provisions that are out of order, the commission piece, the fund transfers, and the counselors and district maintenance of effort provision. But I think now we're back to doing a sequential walkthrough of the bill.
Okay, and if we could start, Mr. Chair, with 120B.021 was the required academic standards, the arts piece. The work group had, to give you a little history, the middle schools must offer three, and students must complete two of a list of courses. I think there's five different types of courses that a district has to offer. And so when the district offers these particular components, what has been troublesome for rural districts is that they may not be able to offer that many, or it's very costly for them.
Representative Tilbury, let me just stop. Members, page 5 of the
Thank
A3
you.
Amendment. Section 9. Representative
yes,
Tilbury.
It's under Section 9 on page 5. And then high schools must offer at least three, and students must complete one credit in the five different areas mentioned, and you can see those are media arts, dance, music, theater, and visual arts, which kind of comes to what I was saying earlier, that in outstate Minnesota, to carry all five of those is could be rather difficult. And so what we came to grips with is we were allowing districts to reduce the offerings in this area to match the number of credit requirements. The bill reduces the provision regarding course offerings to be consistent with the level of courses that students must complete to graduate in these areas. So that would be, if a student must complete two courses in these areas, then the district must offer at least two courses in these areas. So we just match the numbers. And that's what we chose in that particular one.
Representative Obermiller has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you, Representative Tilbury, if you know the definition of media arts that's used in this item, and does that include computer science issues? And so it'll be like graphic design on computers, that sort of thing.
And that's a good question, Mr. Chair, Representative Obermiller. I do not know the extent of that answer. Of whether what that totally includes.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Larson, you have some thoughts here on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tilbury, I believe that at least in part it is a matter of local determination since we don't have state-mandated curriculum.
Well, Representative Tilbury.
Okay, so if we move, if we're moving on, did that, I think that answered the question of that. Okay. I didn't hear it. If we move to the next one, which is 120B.39, uniform forms for state exams in high school. This was one of the ones that was already introduced in the original House File 920.
Let's hold up a second, Representative Tilbury. I want to make sure members are looking at the language on the.
So if we move to the original bill.
So this is on the original bill.
And it's just the repealer in Section 2.
Oh, I see.
So it doesn't really tell you much on
right.
the bill.
Yeah, we've got several repealers there. So this is 120B.39.
Yeah, 120B.39.
Very well. Representative Tilbury.
Oh.
And then what we have is, this is where the request of any superintendent of any public or private school teaching high school courses in the state, the commissioner shall designate or prepare uniform forms for state examinations in each high school subject during the month of May of each year. The request shall be in writing and delivered to the commissioner before January 1st of that year. I don't believe that that the department was having any difficulty with this when we had our public hearings, and so they were okay with getting this out with that. We can also move to 122A.628. The schools mentoring schools. This is also in the original House File 920.
Representative Tilbury, members, you'll find the language. You obviously find the repeal language on page 2, but on the next page you will find a description of the language that's being repealed. It took me a while to do that as well. I was glancing over Representative McFarland, you had the same look I had at first on my face. So there you have the language spelled out that's being repealed. So Representative Silver, 122A.628.
Yes, this particular language, the funding for the program no longer exists, and so that's the choice that we made to go ahead and repeal this particular mandate. We can move to the next one. This is also in House File 920 as introduced to the repealer in Section 2. This is the Administrator's Academy. The school boards noted that an institute for school principals already exists under a separate statute, and they suggested to either eliminate duplicative missions or consider merging the two. The work group decided to repeal this section. The next one that we have is 123B.10, the publishing requirements.
Let's make sure we're tracking the language, and this is on the A3 amendment language.
This is on section 11 of the A3 amendment on page 7.
Thank you. Representative Silver.
Also, we do have... We had some intent in the work group to still provide newspapers with some kind of documents to be printed. I believe this one says that, gives some recommendations to this. This law mandates that school districts publish the board's minutes and budget information in legal newspaper, despite the school board's contention that few people read this information. The school boards requested that the option to publish minutes on their website with a simple note in the newspaper stating the web address where the information can be found. The bill provides such authority to school districts. Now, Chair, one of the things I want to make sure, as we reported from the work group, I think what we had is a certain amount of things we wanted to accomplish during this, and we may have not been... in accuracy on this particular one, and I was wondering if it'd be possible to bring someone forward to just state what the message that we had for the work group and what we decided on and not get it incomplete.
That'd be fine, Representative Silver. Morning. State your name for the record. And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sandy Niren. I'm with Mezzaline Kramer, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Newspaper Association. And I want to thank Representative Tilbury for his kindness in listening to some of our concerns about some of the legislation on mandates. In Section 11 of the bill, I have talked with Representative Tilbury, and I think he is comfortable with language that would amend this section to permit schools to publish a summary of their financial statements instead of simply taking it out of the newspaper completely and having it only available by web. And so I do have language that I can give to council to fix that section if that is still Representative Tilbury's intent.
Mr. Chair, I feel like the work group did come up with this plan, but when we put it together, it didn't read the same way, and we were notified of that this morning. But it is consistent with what Representative Lanning is doing with that mandate reduction piece with publications in his particular bill, and that's why we wanted to make it very similar. And so that's what I thought we had agreed to, and we just didn't have it as neat as we should have.
So, Representative Tilbury, you'll be looking to amend this particular section.
Yeah.
And so why don't we get the wording out for members, and in the meantime, we'll just continue to go through the bill. Unless it's a simple verbal amendment.
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be on page 7, delete the new language in lines 15 and 16, and instead insert page 7, line 15, after published, insert a summary of. And this would mirror language that was introduced in the Senate in the K-12 bill.
So members, the chair will then move a oral amendment on the A3 amendment to on page 7, on lines 715 and 716, to strike the new language, and after the word "publish" on line 715, insert a summary of. Representative Norton.
Just for clarification, are we still leaving "in" rather than "or" on the next stricken line, and the address of the district's website, so that people have reference to where to go for the complete information? I guess that's a question or a recommendation. I'm not sure which.
I think it was both. As I understand the amendment, that would strike that language. Representative Tilbury.
That'd be correct.
Representative Norton.
Well, I guess I'm wondering if, I'm not sure what the proper terminology is, but if you would consider amending that to only striking the word "either" and changing the word "or" to "and" and leaving the remainder of the underlined "in."
Representative Silver.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I'm not quite sure I understand what you were trying to accomplish. There is already language here that does mandate that they put it on their website also. So it would be in both places. Current law already requires them to put it on their website in addition to the newspaper.
Mr. Chair, so...
Representative Norton.
In a different place in law, is I guess because it... All right.
I think on page 7... Mr. Chair, on page 7, line 13... put the post materials in a conspicuous place on the district's official website. That's already current law, and we're not touching that. All we're doing with this amendment is permitting them to publish a summary in the newspaper instead of the entire financial statement.
Thank you, and I guess I'm still encouraging... thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still encouraging the recommended change, because it then you are not only publishing your summary, but you're also informing the community where they can find the rest of the information, and I think that's a public service as opposed to assuming that everybody knows. So I don't think I'm changing what you're doing. I'm just asking you to add the website to that summary.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. That's a good amendment.
So, Representative Tilbury, what's the amendment that we should be moving here then?
that's a good question. One of those things that I could say, Representative Norton, and what she just said.
Why don't we do this, Representative Tilbury? I'll withdraw my amendment. Let's rework the language. We'll continue to push through the bill. Representative McFarland has a question.
I think I have the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a comment that maybe could be added, and I hate to keep adding, but not everybody has internet, and so maybe having the full information available upon request to the superintendent's office might be another possibility.
Representative Norton and I have figured out the amendment if you want us to give it to you.
Why don't we try it again, Ms. Norton? I'm sorry, how do you pronounce your last name?
Excuse me?
How do you pronounce your last name?
Naren.
Naren.
That's all right.
Ms. Naren.
I think the amendment would now read instead on page 7, line 15, strike either, the new word either, and instead insert a summary of, and then or would be changed to and.
So the chair would move that on line 715, after the word published, insert a summary of, delete the word either, and delete the word or on line 17, and insert and. Did I get that right? On line 15.
That'd be correct.
Representative Norton? Does that thumbs up? Very well. Members, all in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Tilbury, on line 711, 712, and 713, we have the truth in taxation hearing issue. Can you speak to that issue?
Can you point that out again?
Representative Tilbury, line 711 through 713, we're striking that budget information required by this section is provided as part of the truth in taxation hearing. We're striking the requirement to post those materials.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It took me a couple seconds to get to that.
Toby, I'm sorry. I didn't hear your...
And that's with the 275.065 proposed property taxes notice, because it dealt with publications. Is that why you brought that part up? With the truth in taxation hearings, what we decided to do is, once again, we have Representative Lanning's mandate release bill, House File 1195. It covers it in Article 1, Sections 3 to 4. We matched language with that.
Very well. Why don't you continue, Representative Silver?
Okay, if we move to 120B.11, the review of curriculum, instruction, and student achievement, it's under Section 10 of A3 Amendment on page 6. As regards to this item, the school board requested that the legislature, assess the number of reports the districts are required to complete in terms of reporting student progress and achievement, eliminate excessive printing and mailing cost requirements, in an effort so as not to conflict with ongoing efforts pertaining to the school report card and preserve the accountability surrounding the law. The work group bill amends the statute in a manner so as to be consistent with the needs of the school report card. The A3 amendment deletes the current statutory requirement the school boards must make a copy of the annual report on curriculum, instruction, and student achievement available to the public. The bill still preserves the current law's requirement that the report be available upon request by the public.
Very well. Members, any questions? If not, why don't you proceed, Representative?
Okay, and on the next one, 123B.143, Superintendent, this is actually in the House File 920 as introduced under Section 1.
Page 1 of the 920 original.
Right, and the school boards and administrators requested that the legislature eliminate the annual report requirement identifying the expenditures that the district requires to ensure an 80% student passage rate on the MCAA's twos taken in eighth grade, identifying the highest student passage rate the district expects it will be able to attain on the MCAA twos by grade 12, and then the amount of the expenditures that the district requires to attain the targeted student passage rates. This particular bill then would repeal this law.
And I'm told that this provision has been moved in past years in the K-12 omnibus bill, or finance omnibus bill.
That's what was told to me, too.
Representative Zepke.
I'm sorry, Tom. Representative Tillsbury, could you tell us where we are right now on the report?
Okay.
The actual language is on page 2 of the House File 920 bill as in language as introduced.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Chair, if I can
move
on. 123B.57, capital expenditures, health and safety, would be found in section 13 of the A3 amendment on page 7. The school boards and administrators requested that the legislature eliminate the requirement for review and comment by commissioner on health and safety projects over $500,000. The Minnesota Department of Ed stated they were neutral on this proposal. And per the school boards and school business officials' request, the bill eliminates this requirement.
Members, another finance provision that I would hope would be much less. Quite all right. We need to walk through the bill, but one that I would hope would be much more fully vetted in K-12 finance. Representative Tilbury.
Yes, the next one. This one refers to the alternative facilities bonding and levy program.
This will be on page 8 of the A3 amendment.
Yes, 123B.71.
Oh, hold on. Page 8, section 15.
Yes, page 8, section 14 of the A3 amendment. And what it states is the school boards and administrators, and once again, this is a money item, that the legislature eliminate commissioner review and a $500,000 limit. The Minnesota Department of Ed stated they were also neutral on this proposal. And so per the school boards and school business officials, the bill eliminates this particular requirement.
Very well. Representative Tilbury.
And then the next one is 123B.71. This would be section 15 of the A3 amendment on pages 8 through 9. This is a review and comment for school district construction. At the work group's hearing, the school boards requested that the limit requiring review and comment by the commissioner for new construction expansion or remodeling of an educational facility that requires an expenditure in excess of $500,000 per school site be adjusted for inflation. This particular number has not been touched for years. And so the Minnesota Department of Ed stated they were also neutral on this proposal. The A3 amendment does this by raising the threshold for review from $500,000 to $1.4 million.
Very well.
The next section is 123B.76, expenditures reporting. If you see section 16 of the A3 amendment on page 9. The school boards and administrators requested that the legislature eliminate reporting by building. Reporting should be done by district with the option of reporting by building. The bill amends the law by providing that school districts identify general fund expenditures for each building to the extent provided by the Uniform Financial Accounting Reporting Standards, otherwise known as UFARS, for school districts. It also provides that the general fund expenditures not available at the building level through the Uniform Financial Accounting and Reporting Standards may be reported on a building or district-wide basis. And I was told this morning that the business partnership was okay with the language that we put in. And I love to say this, there seems to be peace in the valley.
Oh, wonderful. We like peace in the valley.
So if we move to the next one, it's 124D.68, Graduation Incentives Program. We'll see Section 17 of the A3 Amendment on page 10. And by way of the background in this, the purpose of the Graduation Incentives Program is to encourage all Minnesota students who have experienced difficulty in the traditional education system to enroll in alternative programs. Subdivision 2 of the statute outlines which pupils are eligible to participate in this program. The school board's requested that they be given more latitude whether to accept eligible pupils spelled out in Subdivision 2 of the statute. The bill clarifies this language by adopting language that's consistent with an agreement between the Minnesota School Boards Association and the National Alliance for Mentally Ill, and that's where we went with that one. In fact, they worked all this weekend to come up with the language to fit.
Representative Tilbury, my only question would be, by doing this, would we be creating a sort of a limbo situation for students that have been expelled? I mean, they are still, required to attend schools and have right to an access to public education. Are we creating an impossible situation relative to their ability to continue to be enrolled somewhere?
I would ask that if I could call a testifier to answer that question, that would be
very
great.
Well.
Ms. Kelleher?
Ms. Kelleher.
From the School Board Association. And then also Sue from NAMI. Nine. Sorry. What happens when you don't have that extra letter in that acronym there?
Sue Abderholden?
Yeah.
Is that correct? I'm not that smart. It's only because my staff recognize the name. So. So I'm in the same boat as you, Representative Tilbury. Ms. Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman and members, what we really wanted to do is there are two statutes here that are always somewhat conflicted, at least in the school board's mind, mm-hmm. against each other. You've got graduation incentive, which has a list of 12 kinds of kids. If you meet any one of those standards, school district, we feel have to accept them. Our problem is that in the open enrollment statute, it does say that school districts can deny students who have four pieces with them, so you don't have to receive them. They would be students who have been convicted of possession of a dangerous weapon, possession of use of a legal drug at school or school functions, selling or soliciting the sale of controlled substances at school or school functions, and committing a third-degree assault, which actually takes in felonies, too. So if those three, four benchmarks were hit, the non-resident school district would have the ability to not accept that child under that program. As always, though, the resident district is responsible for that child's education. Nothing is changed by doing this other than that a non-resident district, if they can still accept the child, they might. It just might be another place the child needs to be. This at least gives them some flexibility to look at the case-by-case basis.
Thank you. Ms. Abderholden.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, NAMI, Minnesota. Originally, the suggestion was to put this paragraph under who's eligible for the graduation incentive program, and we believe those students should still be eligible. But putting it here allows that flexibility. So if, in fact, you know, the student would still be eligible, the school district looks at what, you know, what's happened in the non-resident district and feels like they could take the child in and educate them in some way, they can still do that. So we believe this is a good compromise.
And Ms. Abderholden, I'm sorry, can you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI, Minnesota.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Representative Tilbury. Thank you, Ms. Keller and Ms. Abderholden. Representative Tilbury, I think we're getting close here.
Yes, I think we are.
Yes.
The only thing I wanted to add, because I think the next item was the proposed property tax notice, and I don't know if we had covered that earlier, because we did with the truth and taxation hearing. That was the
page 11.
Of that one. Page 11 through 18. Sections 19 and 20, we had discussed that as how we matched that up with Representative Maury Lanning's mandate relief bill. and chose to put it in that way. And then the remainder was on the Legislative Commission on Mandate Reform, which I talked about earlier.
Very well.
So I think we've covered everything that we have. The only piece that, you know, after going through all of this and all of this talk about this language and that language and so on, what did it really do for schools? As far as we can tell, when we sent out as a work group to the superintendents of schools, we had our selected superintendents send us things on what they thought might, you know, out of these 24 that we picked, what would it save them? Well, to give an example, we had figured out in Wayzata, they were going to save about $100,000 with just the changes that we made, if that were to be true. And that was their best guesstimate. As we went through all of our changes, we were able to calculate from what the superintendent stated that they would save for each area. We added it up, and it came out to $100,000 for one school district. If you multiply that out statewide, this does something for schools, and that is what the work group assigned us to do, to be, allow schools to find some money in times of this.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Tilbury. Members, questions? Representative Zepke.
Thank you very much. I have only one concern, Representative Tilbury, and that is on the Commission on Mandate Reform. I know that we did discuss talking to Maury Lanning's group on a couple of the items. I believe this particular amendment goes much further than that, and it might have some financial consequences that we are not completely aware of. Our group was meant to be formed as an education group. Under your leadership, were very thorough, very concerned about the education community, and allowed them in. I would like to suggest that before we make this a permanent part of the amendment, that we go through the same vetting process with Maury Lanning's group to make sure that we are doing all of the considerate things and thoughtful things for the education community as we did in all the other mandates, and I would like you to consider that.
Mr. Chair, I would definitely be open to that. Some of the language that Maury has in here, too, I didn't see until this morning, so I agree. We need to look at it as it refers to our education pieces.
And we do have two individuals who wish to comment on the commission piece, so as long as we're on that, why don't we ask them to come forward. Ms. Weber with the Department of Education, and Sue Aderholden with NAMI. Thank you. Ms. Weber, morning.
Morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. We had our legal department take a look at this last evening, and they are particularly concerned with Section 6 with respect to rulemaking. The implications with respect to federal laws, but this is on page 4, line 25.
Thank you.
This will significantly impact what the department is required to do with respect to federal law. Federal law often requires us to promulgate rules, and we, if we were to have suspension of that, we could be at risk of losing federal funds. There's also, the question has been raised about the constitutionality with respect to the separation of powers with respect to the commission.
Ms. Aderholden.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sue Aderholden, NAMI, Minnesota. We, too, have great concerns about Section 6, the same section, and I actually, when this was introduced by Representative Lanning, I did contact his office, and we have a meeting set up in a week and a half to talk about this. I just feel that it's kind of odd for these 14 people who are part of a commission to actually have the authority to suspend a rule because someone said something negative about it in testimony. I understand, as hard as it is to figure out the legislative process, but we, you know, can come over and have people testify and really have good dialogue about, you know, why a mandate was put into place, what works, what doesn't work about a rule. But to have this commission to be able to suspend a rule come back the next session with a bill to either implement their decision or not. I don't even see administratively how you would do that. If, in fact, this commission, for example, got rid of a special education rule, came back the next session, we prevailed and said, no, you should keep it. Has the department already told them not to do that? And then, you know, how do you redo that? And frankly, some of these mandates are very complicated. I've sat on several different groups with county human services mandates, what the child welfare, you know, division has to do versus the mental health division versus special education. I don't honestly see how those 14 people could really have all the knowledge to be able to make those kinds of decisions.
Thank you. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to let members know, and I know Representative Depke and Tilby are on finance, we will definitely be reviewing this with a fine-tooth comb.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm echoing the concerns of the last two representatives. I think, you know, this is new. I think there are a lot of unanswered questions about it, and I have real concerns about the powers and what it does do, and I don't know the implications, so I certainly hope that the Finance Committee does a thorough review.
Representative Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a process question, and I have a question about the commission. Is this, if this stays intact, I presume this bill would go to GovOps and taxes, is that right?
Well, that's what I heard this morning.
Tilbury.
Yeah, that's what I heard this morning, Mr. Chair, that it could have to go to GovOps because of that.
I believe that's correct. Representative Adler.
And the taxes, too, since you have the all that notice requirement, right?
Representative Tilbury, I suspect that's correct as well. Representative Abler?
Well, Representative Greiling had something to that point, probably.
Representative Greiling on this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, K-12 always goes to taxes, as you know, so everything in here goes to taxes. But anything in an omnibus bill, even if it applies to rulemaking, does not go to GovOps.
All right. And, Mr. Chair...
Representative Abler, so I stand corrected.
Yeah, okay. And I actually, that might be a weakness of not letting us be scrutinized by those, not that it's our process, but I don't mind having a group of legislators butting heads with departments about rules. I think it creates a healthy dialogue. You might not have got the profile the way it was if this would have been so. But there are this section of law, if this is the Lanning-Tilbury reform package, which now it's an omnibus, which the drill was to move along, I suppose. But this amends the Legislative Coordinating Commission section of law. And if you want advice about how to make it better, I don't have an amendment today because it's going to move along to places, but Representative Greiling, you might be interested to know also that if you just take Section 6, which is the heart of what they can suspend rules, if you give that power to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, if you just leave that section in and get rid of the whole rest of it, you don't need any new per diems, any new prices, it would be free. If you give the LCC, which exists now and actually meets and is made of people who are quite responsible, the power to suspend rules, that would be a more focused, targeted bill and not require the money. And this grant money is, I can't imagine that lasts. So, if I had a vote on this section, I would just vote no. But if you're going to keep working on it and try to refine it, I like people to work on things and have the chance to go refine it. But that's kind of glad I'm sure if you're listening. But if you look at Section 6 on page 4, this is modifying the Legislative Coordinating Commission statute. And if you just gave that commission the power to suspend rules, they're already thought of to be responsible, and they do meet, and it would take no money to give them that power if you chose to. That would be a lean, clean way which your Finance Committee might want to act on. So,
Representative Abler, I've been told by staff that apparently we've been advised by Mark Shepard on staff that because of the unique nature of this particular language, that it may indeed need to go to GovOps without the pathway through the K-12 finance. There is a new commission that's being created, and the commission itself speaks to not just K-12 mandates, but across the board mandates, the state government. So that's a pretty unique animal, if you will, which our well-respected staff tells us probably does deserve a separate vetting in front of GovOps.
Mr. Chair, just one final comment about this section. And as you rewrite this, and I'm happy to help if you like, especially with the butting heads part. I think the bar of having negative testimony would be a little higher bar than that. So.
Very well. Representative Loom.
I thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tilbury and other members for their work on this important subject. But I've got to say, and I don't know if it's just being a freshman or new to this, but I'm just frankly very confused by this process and why we're considering the creation of a legislative commission on mandate reform, which encompasses, as I understand it, other things outside of the purview of education policy, which is this committee is dealing with. You know, at the beginning of this session, we all received sort of those blue packets of all of the mandates that our school districts are having to comply with, and that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the need to reduce mandates and provide more flexibility and local control, especially as budgets are always tight. And I guess I'm a little frustrated or just confounded about the need or the discussion to create more and more commissions and working groups and task force outside of the process that exists here within this committee, other education committees within the legislature. It was kind of my assumption that's why we're here and why we couldn't perhaps just bring those mandates up and bring in testifiers to discuss them and craft a piece of legislation that either eliminates or alters some of those. So it just seems to me that this is a little bit more cumbersome process of going to this task force and working group, and I guess I'll throw that out just as a question. If this is a process that has seemed to work better in the past and just dealing with it at the committee level, or kind of what this process is about.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I'm not necessarily married to this commission act at all in this bill. Okay, I just figured as far as if Representative Lanning was producing some, and if we could piggyback on that to save time and effort, that would be a great thing. But if it comes out to be so controversial, then we could easily change it into a sunset rule and be done with it. And I don't have any difficulty with that, because we did want to have people looking at our work after we were done. The whole objective, if Representative Greiling in the K-12 finance did not assign a work group to this, I don't know where it would be. If we were sitting in a committee doing this type of work and calling testifiers, we would not get done with this. And this saving of money for school districts would not happen at all, because we'd never get through the process. So the work group, I think, did take on the role of really scrutinizing that list of blue, that blue sheet and so on. And I just want to see somebody be able to look at our work and say, yes, this was good work. This is what should have happened. This is how much money was saved.
Representative Tilbury, it strikes the chair that, you know, that this is it's not like we don't occasionally visit mandates and act on them, but I think in this session there's been strong desire to act on a larger scale than perhaps we've acted on in quite a many years here. And as I hear your the rationale here, I think what you're basically arguing is that given that scale, that you want to make sure that there's the utmost care that's provided in regards to any of these decisions, and that in my mind this really, you know, speaks to the unique nature of this year, and also speaks to the fact that this legislative session is only in session for a few months out of the year. And in my mind, as a person who's long believed that we really ought to be a year-round legislature, this is a good argument on why you would have such an entity to be able to much more carefully and dutifully, you know, go through some pretty complex issues here. So what I'm hearing you say is that you're looking for some extra kind of diligence, and, you know, considering that there's always the possibility of unintended consequences, and that mandates exist precisely because there's some pretty important issues that were put on the table years ago. However, I think Representative Loon's point is correct, that, you know, we are nonetheless empowered to make decisions here, and at some point you just need to make them. And so there's that balance between those two issues. I suspect that if this bill moves forward, that this issue of the commission is going to resurface again. And I share both your desire to provide good, careful diligence here, but I also, Representative Loon, I hear your thoughts on this clearly. Anyone else? Representative Deputy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tewksbury, with your permission, I would like to make a motion that we, from what I'm hearing from you, that you are not married to this particular, that we strike from the amendment that we're considering today lines 1.2 through 5.5, and certainly that we can, as a group, get together with Maury Lanning and then do a more thorough vetting process and then introduce it at a later date if that's your desire.
This was your motion would remove sections 1 through 8, which are the commission sections of the A3 amendment. Representative Deputy moves that sections, help me if I get this wrong, that sections 1 through 8.
1.4 through 5.5.
So it'd be
tabled
1 through the top of 5. 1.4 through 5.5. Yes. Ms. Foster, can you say that out loud for me?
Mr. Chairman, members, the sections that you've referenced, sections 1 through 8, are exactly the same as the language that appears in House File 1195, Article 4, on the Legislative Commission on Mandate Reform. Those are the 8 sections that constitute that Article 4.
Very well. So Representative Deputy moves removal of sections 1 through 8. Discussion. Representative Tilbury.
Well, I guess I'm looking at the will of the committee to decide this particular piece, since I, like I said, I'm not necessarily attached.
Well, Representative Riley.
I support the amendment as well.
Representative Spence.
So do I, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else care to join in?
That was easy, Mr. Chair.
All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Tilbury, I think we're ready to move your bill.
Yes, we are.
Very well. The chair renews his motion that House File 920, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to K-12 Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Hold same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Tilbury and Representative Zepke. You are the two members present here that were on this work task force. I appreciate all the work and effort. And obviously, we'll continue to work on this. And good luck in the next committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you. Members, we have House File 1037, Representative Squales. Representative Squales moves that House File 1037 be recommended to pass and referred to the Public Safety Committee. Members, we're probably not going to be able to get through this bill in the next 5 minutes, but I wanted to absolutely make sure that we heard testimony from two citizens, including one of our younger citizens in the state. I wanted to make sure we honor your effort to be here today and get your testimony in, and then we'll pick up further discussion of House File 1037 at a subsequent meeting. Representative Blair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To get the bill before the committee, I will simply move the House file. I will introduce the amendment when we next meet. It's more important that I introduce
very well
my constituents. This is a dear friend of mine, Athene Johnson, and one of my best friends, Alex Jones. And Alex is a homeschooled student, and I just wanted you to see the face of what a homeschooler looks like. She's a profoundly gifted child, and that's one of the reasons that she is being homeschooled. And I thought perhaps Athene would like to share a little bit about her experience as a homeschool mom.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Johnson. It's our custom to have our testifiers identify themselves for the record. Excuse me, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Athene Johnson. As Representative Swell said, this is my daughter, Alex. We're a homeschool family from Woodbury. And
good morning, Alex.
Kind of in two capacities. One as a homeschool mom, and the other as a messenger of sorts for MHA, the Minnesota Homeschoolers Alliance. That's the Johnson represents Mache, and MHA is the non-sectarian statewide organization. And because I agreed to bring their message on the bill, I should just at least read their position statement first real quick. MHA supports the reductions in reporting requirements in this bill. However, MHA is concerned that the elimination of the non-public student aid will adversely affect many homeschoolers in this troubled economy. And I'll let Mr. Chuma speak more to the details of that and try and, as Representative Doyle said, put a face on homeschoolers. That's an extraordinarily difficult task because there is just incredible diversity within the homeschool community. And I guess for me, I have a somewhat unique perspective because I also have a 17-year-old daughter who's been in public schools since the beginning. So I've been able to experience both tracks, if you will. Homeschooling is an extraordinarily difficult job. It's a very demanding job as a parent, but for me it feels like a natural extension of mothering my daughter, and I think it's worked tremendously well for us. She's doing really well. It's hard to keep up with her. I know it'd be hard in a public school to keep up with her, but she learns so quickly that I'm constantly having to adapt. And for that, I really rely on our network. I network with homeschool groups that are local here in the Twin Cities and throughout the state, and we really help and support each other in tremendous ways. And I knew nothing about homeschooling when I came to this. It kind of fell into our laps because it seemed like kind of our last good option to address what her specific needs were. Many families homeschool for very different reasons. Many of the families that Mr. Chuma is here representing today do it for religious reasons. We do it because she's gifted. There are many families who do it for other reasons, concerns about bullying in the schools, or maybe their children have disabilities or other special needs that it makes it easier to address in the household. Some people do it just for the sheer love of it. And over the years of doing this, now that's why I'm doing it, for the sheer love of it, for the sheer love of being with my daughter and helping her learn and being part of her life learning. And we just got back from 2 days ago from a month-long intensive cultural and language immersion trip in Mexico, something that now I wish I could have done it with my older daughter. It's homeschooling has really brought amazing opportunities to us, but it's at the same time a very difficult and demanding task. And so with this bill, what I would just encourage you all to keep in mind is that anything that helps make it easier for us to do this job, oh my, I truly appreciate. It's not as if I feel like the reporting burdens currently in place are overly onerous, but many of them seem unnecessary to me, and apparently also to the superintendents. So anything that we can do to make it easier for us to do this important job for our children, to help the superintendents focus on what they really need to be focusing on for all of our students, and to help the state make it through this troubled economy and ease the burdens on the state, I just want to encourage you to support. And I really am very grateful to Representative Swell for introducing the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. We are at our adjournment date, or adjournment time, rather, and date, I suppose.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Swales.
I was just hoping you might have a brief conversation with Alex Kinston.
Wonderful. Ah. Muy buenos días, Alex. ¿Cómo estás?
Bien.
¿Sí? ¿Cuántos años tienes?
Casi ocho.
No me digas, tan grande. ¿Y te gusta estudiar con tu mamá?
Sí.
¿Sí? ¿Es buena maestra tu mamá?
Sí.
Sí, qué bueno. So mom's a good teacher, is what I... She confirmed it, so... Me alegro verte. Espero que estés bien. Muy bien, gracias por estar aquí.
Sí.
Members, we will lay this bill over for discussion at a subsequent hearing. And Ms. Johnson, I want to thank you again. And Alex, thank you. Gracias for being here with us today. All right. Members, until Tuesday, we stand adjourned.